Ricky Byrne, thanks for joining us on WTOP. How did you find out about this benefit concert?
I've been actually doing this with John and the crew, John Belinky and the crew, for about the last 10 years. I missed a few years because of other engagements I was involved in, but I did it last year. We had a great time. It's obviously a great cause, and John asked me back this year.
I just interviewed Simon Kirk yesterday, actually, from Bad Company.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
He's been a friend of mine for ages and ages.
Have you guys ever performed together?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, funny enough, I had a, after I, somewhere along the line after I left the Blackhearts, I put together this cool little band, and we used to play out. I would play acoustic guitar, Simon on drums, and Kasim Sultan, who plays with Todd Rundgren on bass. So we know each other well.
What was the name of that band?
I think it was just my name. It's probably just Ricky Byrne Trio or something.
See, so you guys go way back. So you got, you know, yeah. It'll be, you know, old
and
hat.
And of course, I used to watch Simon. You know, I mean, I grew up on Bad Company and Free.
What's it been like finally playing with the guy that you, you know, respected growing up and helped get you into
music? That's a great question. I could close my eyes and remember nights where I'd be playing, and I would think to myself, "Oh man, that's the All Right Now beat by the actual guy." Yeah, no, I've had my career has been blessed with stuff like that. I got to do a record with Roger Daltrey and tour with him and go out with Ian Hunter and play all the young dudes all over the place. And, you know, it's just power packed with moments like that, playing with Jimmy Page with on a giant, you would probably know about this. It was one of the Beach Boys concerts in D.C., the July 4th concerts they used to put on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We did the last one with me, Joan, and the Blackhearts, and Jimmy Page was one of the guests, so we got to play a little bit together.
Oh, that's wild. So D.C. has a special place in your heart.
Oh, man, I don't think I could ask for anything better for a career, and now next month I'm going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with Joan and the Blackhearts.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. How thrilled are you guys for that? You got to be stoked.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, listen, man, I'm just like a Bronx boy, you know, play guitar, sing. I grew up listening to all these great people that are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And, you know, it was our third time nominated, so I knew eventually we were going to get in. But it's certainly a humbling experience. I mean, I actually play there almost every year. I do a big charity event. The thing is, the Rock Hall event itself takes... It kind of plays in New York one year, then it's in Cleveland, then it's in New York. So every time it's in New York, they actually put on a benefit concert in Cleveland. So I get to play that. I'm part of like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band, all-star band.
Oh, wow.
By the way, we're called the Magnificent Bastards. And
confused with the Inglorious.
Every time I go there, I take a walk through the Rock Hall. Especially last year with the, they had the Stones exhibit.
Yeah,
and I'm
yeah,
a
yeah.
huge Stones fan. So I went through there myself, and, you know, I always get a chill. I mean, you got like Muddy Waters guitar and Sam Cooke's tuxedo, and it's crazy. And now our stuff is going to be in there. I mean, they just took a bunch of my stuff, my actual first guitar that I got when I was 9 years old. It got trashed in Hurricane Sandy, but I donated it to the exhibit. My Les Paul that I played on the first, on I Love Rock and Roll and the tour, you know, my leather jacket, belts, the whole bit.
Wow,
so
yeah.
So it's really mind-blowing. I mean, it's a little too big to even think about.
What's it going to feel? I mean, I was there a couple years ago, and you're right. It's just, it's overwhelming to walk through and just look at all the memorabilia and surrounded by the history.
Crazy.
What's it going to be like to, you know, one day, you know, maybe a year from now or whenever you go back again after the induction and you're just walking through, you know, there's the Sam Cooke thing you're talking about. There's the other thing you're talking about. Oh, wow. And there's my guitar. Are you guys going to be like out of body experience?
I'm having an out of body experience now. And I'll tell you what, you know, they're, the night's going to be an out-of-body experience because, you know, we all have to give a little speech and, you know, I'm going to look out and I'm going to see Ringo sitting at a table and, and probably my old pal Jimmy Vaughn who will represent Stevie Ray and, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of crazy.
Talk about your...
It's like, I mean, when you pick up the guitar, I literally saw the Stones in on TV when I was 9 on the Ed Sullivan Show, and that was the moment I knew that I wanted to be a musician. Frankly, they look like I felt. The girls were screaming, and Ed Sullivan looked horrified, so that kind of sealed the deal for me.
That's the trifecta.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's been a long time, you know, but and never in a million years you would just think you'd wind up in, like, I mean, it basically, it's like the Baseball Hall of Fame, you know?
Absolutely.
It's like Cooperstown, man.
Yeah, talk a little bit about your class that you're getting inducted with. I mean, it's baseball, it's Cooperstown, rock, it's Cleveland. But talk about you know, your fellow people. You mentioned you're going to be able to look
out.
Well,
I'm glad it's a pretty good rock and roll lineup. Lou Reed, Stevie Ray, who I, you know, I met a couple of times back in the 80s. And
Ringo.
Us, Green Day,
Bill, yeah.
Withers, which is amazing because, you know, like I said, if you saw me as a kid at that age in the Bronx, I'd be up on the roof, you know, with a transistor radio in one hand and a Mickey Mantle baseball bat in the other, you know. I mean, it was baseball and music. And obviously, Ain't No Sunshine When She's... I mean, I was on the radio all the time, man.
Absolutely. Man, and now you're getting inducted with them. It's got to be surreal.
Yeah, it's... And let's not forget Ringo.
Oh yeah, you know, when Ringo is a minor footnote, now you know you have a good class.
Yeah, it's from that other band, the other one that was on the Ed.
Yeah. Well, it was funny. We were talking when I was talking yesterday with Simon. He was talking about, you know, the Shooting Star song. You know, Johnny was a schoolboy when he heard his first Beatles song, and he was telling me that he didn't want "Love Me Do" in the lyrics. He said that was a Paul Rodgers thing. He wanted "She Loves You." That was his first Beatles song.
Oh, isn't that funny?
Yeah, and here you are talking about seeing the Stones on Ed Sullivan. Yeah, everybody's inspired by someone.
Of course, we loved the Beatles and the Stones were the tops, man. Sure. You know,
absolutely.
And both will be around way after we're around. But, you know, when you were a kid, there was that whole thing. They had either a Stones fan or... I mean, I just found the Stones nastier, and it was something about them that attracted me into that circle. And then, luckily, my teenage years were filled with Let It Bleed and Sticky Fingers and Get Your Ya-Ya's Out, and that just, like, nailed it.
Absolutely.
You know, that was just me. I mean, between the Stones and Rod Stewart and the Faces and, you know, bands along those lines, that was the kind of music I was into.
Now, we've talked a lot...
As we used to call it, drunken sailor music.
Perfect. You know, we've talked a lot about other bands that influenced you, but let's talk a little bit about your music. I mean, after all these years, and especially, you know, charity concerts like you're going to play, I mean, you've probably played certain songs of, you know, Joan Jett and the Blackheart songs over and over again, but, you know... Are there any, I guess a two-part question, are there any that you're tired of playing, you know, hits you've played
so much?
Well,
listen, man, this is the original band going in.
Right.
I was in the band from 81 to 92. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I left and I played with Roger Daltrey and Ian Hunter and Southside Johnny, and I did a little thing with John Waite. And, you know, and actually I put my own record out last year, actually it was the end of 2013, called Lifer. And it got amazing reviews, straight up rock and roll record, all... the roots I'm talking about, you know, rock and roll, blues, soul, and it got a ton of airplay on, I mean, there's no music business now to speak of except for big pop acts and rap acts and things like that, but the music has actually eaten itself, so to speak, but my record was a straight up rock and roll, blues, soul record, and it got played crazy on Little Steven's Underground Garage, which is XM radio. And, you know, I was very thrilled with the response. I would have liked to have sold a batch more, but like I said, you know, there's really no outlets. There's no record stores to speak of, and you really have to get in a car and tour to sell records. I mean, I sell most of my records by going out and playing gigs. You know, I usually play solo acoustic gigs for my record, because it's cheap and cheerful, actually, and and that's where I sell records, you know, and that's the new generation. That's how we do it.
Right.
That's how us old dogs do it. We go out and we play rock and roll. And but I just heard something interesting, that the biggest selling music genre right now is classic rock, which is interesting. So you would think it would be pop and rap, but I think really hard, you know, CD sales or classic rock.
Well, yeah, and we were talking about this before with Bad Company yesterday. I don't know what it is, but I mean, I'm a 30-year-old man myself, and classic rock is like all I listen to. Maybe it was just,
yeah,
you know,
I'm a bit older than you, baby.
maybe it's just because that's all, you know, my parents listened to growing up. But man, like, all you guys are all my favorite bands. Why do you think it's so timeless?
Well, because it's good.
Exactly. You know? Anything,
I mean,
good is timeless.
Why is Frank Sinatra still played? You know, why
right.
is that? I mean, there was a lot of this in any generation. There's a lot of crap music, but the good stuff sticks around. I mean, Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Bad Company, always be around.
Yep.
Jumpin' Jack Flash will always be around. I mean, it's like you said, She Loves You, or any
right.
kind of Beatles song, or The Kinks, You Really Got Me, or it's just classic stuff, you know.
Yep.
And just because you get to a certain age, you still love music. I mean, we all get to. The way it works is you get responsibilities, you stop going out, you know. That's a big problem, too, because people just stop going to clubs. Live music is,
right.
is dying a slow death. And I think people certainly have a need. I mean, I can only talk about the reaction I got from my record. My record is a classic rock and roll record, but I don't think it would be played on classic rock, because classic rock radio is old music.
Right, right,
you know?
Right.
But my music actually, you know, because I paid for this record myself, I did exactly what I wanted. And I basically aimed my record at the kind of music, it's all original, but it's all the music, the vibe and the soul that I listened to when I was 13 years old. That's how I kind of, that was the blueprint.
Well, I appreciate you playing that music still, you know, like you're saying.
Well, somebody's got to do it. It's a dirty job, my friend, but somebody's got to do it.
How can we bring it back? I mean, I feel like a lot of the music now is auto-tuned, computerized stuff, pop stuff. I mean, how do we bring rock back, man? I mean, that's music.
Well, first of all, songwriters are going out of business. I mean, you know, this is a very long conversation.
Sure.
Free downloading really killed
yeah.
songwriting, and royalties have been cut by 2/3. So people that used to have publishing deals, or people that would make a living, I mean, it was hard to make a living anyway in the music business, but only for the you know, the 1%
right.
that did. And now, because of all the free, basically stealing of music,
right.
Songwriters can't make money, you know, so you can't pay your bills. And like I said, clubs close constantly because people just don't want to go out. And unless you have a new generation of people that love rock and roll, no pun intended,
pun very intended,
yeah.
But that's your bad reputation.
The good news is, you know, I'll come across people that say, yeah, man, I grew up on Zeppelin. And, you know, it's funny. I was watching late night TV the other night, obviously, because late night TV wouldn't be on in the morning. But I was watching Zeppelin's reunion show, Celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And then what came after that was Jeff Beck, Live
man.
In Tokyo, that just came out.
Man.
And I sat there like a little kid, and I went, yeah, man, this was magic.
Yeah.
I mean, Jimmy Page was and Robert Plant and John Paul Jones, and obviously John Bonham's passed, but his son on drums, it was like, it was alien. It was from another world.
Right.
You know, just the combination and the Who, man, you know, just watching those four guys. I mean, I'm at the age where I was lucky enough to go see The Who with Keith Moon in the band, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing like that out there now.
I know.
You know? I mean, the Foo Fighters are a great rock and roll band.
Mm-hmm.
But The Who were like, I mean, Pete Townsend's a genius. There's a difference. Jack White's pretty cool. He's
right.
a very smart guy. His roots are right where my roots are. All his music sounds like it was made in a little shack in Memphis or something.
Right.
And that's fine with me, you know?
Will the Rock Hall keep finding new bands to induct? I mean, we're talking about how, you know, those types
of
bands
are
around.
They still haven't inducted Jay Giles and like 100 other bands that should be in there, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it should be called the Music Hall of Fame.
Right. It's
because there's so many different things that have nothing to do with rock and roll. And
it's like a crossover genre hall now.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they came up with that name. I'm blessed and humbled to go into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it probably should be the Music Hall of Fame, you know?
Maybe it's...
Because it's just so many different, you know, I mean, Donna Summer's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
It's weird. I mean, God bless her. I mean, she was great for what she did,
right.
But it's such a weird, there's so many weird people there that have nothing to do with rock and roll. But
maybe
yeah,
that's the role part of it. You know, maybe you guys are the rock part
roll,
and they're the role.
Rock and roll has a long history that started, you know, I mean, you go to Chuck Berry and then you go to Louis Jordan before that, and then you're in this bebop era and swing and and blues and soul. I mean, rock and roll didn't just show up. It was born out of other kinds of music, and a lot of it was economic, too. I mean, big bands, now you're getting a history lesson, baby.
Hey, it's all right, man. Let's go.
Big bands in the 30s and the 40s, I mean, post-war, when all of a sudden it was too expensive to tour, like the Glenn Miller Orchestra or you know, these giant 40-piece freaking bands or whatever with horns and this and that. They started to slim down, and then that turned into something else. And then that turned into something else. And then you get the combination of, you know, blues and soul from down south and then from Chicago. And it was all in a stew, and that turned into rock and roll. You know, somebody picked up a guitar and turned it into this. And the ironic part of it is, talk about history, is how Race Records were not allowed to be played in New York, in America, really, except for certain stations. And every time you read something about Elvis or anybody down south, like Jerry Lee Lewis or Johnny Cash, you know, they would be little kids with their ear to this little radio that was barely picking up a, you know, small wattage radio station that would play what they called Race Records, which was, you know, Jimmy Reed, Elmore James, Big Mabel, like all these records. And that was their influence. I mean, how do you think Elvis sounded like Elvis?
Absolutely.
You know, and then it just grew. It just kept growing. But the funny thing is, it took the fans in Europe, like a Mick and a Keith and a Ray Davies and, the Who started out as an R&B band. You know, they would play, if you get their first record, it's like a bunch of cool R&B covers.
Yeah.
And then they sold it back to us.
Yeah,
of course, we had our own stuff. We had Creedence Clearwater, and we had the San Francisco scene, and, you know, this and that. But, like, blues-based rock and roll was pretty much sold back to us by people like the Stones. And frankly, I was going to actually thank people like Keith at the Rock Hall for not only being a good and bad influence on me, but also for giving me a history lesson. And that's my main thing in life is like, my musical speech is that it's every generation should have their own music. That's the way it's always been and always will be. Mm-hmm. But you should always know the history of where it came from.
I love that. Past is prologue.
And those guys, when I was a kid and I used to read rock magazines and, you know, Keith or Brian Jones would say, yeah, man, Elmore James, slide guitar, or Howlin' Wolf, or Muddy Waters, or Otis Redding, and Wilson Pickett. I mean, look, radio in New York was brilliant when I was a kid, like ABC, you know, MCA, the good guys, you know. And the thing about it that's different now is when I was, a preteen listening in the Bronx, my little transistor radio, that station on AM would play Dean Martin, Otis Redding, and the Rolling Stones, one after another. Well, see, now you got that on XM radio, but it's different stations.
Right.
So if a kid only locks into one station, he's not going to hear Benny Goodman.
Right.
And he's not going to hear the deep stuff. Like, you know, they never really played. I mean, they played Mustang Sally, Wilson Pickett. You know, they didn't play the deep stuff. You know, you never heard Muddy Waters really on the radio and things like that. I had to learn about that from these British musicians that like Peter Green, John Mayall. These guys taught me about the blues.
Yeah.
And then I went back and I went, whoa, man. And the really sad part of it is I was on tour so much from 81 to 92 with Joan that I really missed going to see these guys. I mean, at the end, they were playing little clubs in Manhattan. You know, you could go and see Muddy Waters at a little club, or you could see, I mean, I did see Albert King at the Lone Star, but they were like bigger over in Europe than they were here.
Right.
And I'm sorry that I didn't really get to see a lot of them before they passed away.
Because you were out doing your thing.
But I did get to jam with like Rufus Thomas and you know, I've had a lot of really cool experiences. Like I said, I saw Albert King, and I saw B.B. King, and Albert Collins, you know. But most of these guys are passing now. And look, our rock and roll heroes are all in their 70s now.
Yeah.
It's the way it goes, baby. It's life on life's terms.
That's how it goes. Are you still working on your speech for the Rock Hall? Because the more you can weave in this history, the more I think you're golden.
Well, I think I only got a minute.
Oh yeah. Do you each have, everyone in the Black Arts has to get up and say something?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I'm going to thank people, and that's probably what I'm going to do.
That's all you'll get, yeah.
What you learn from watching these shows is thank the important people first, because otherwise it's going to get cut out.
Yeah, because that's usually all you get.
Yeah, and it's crazy. It's crazy ridiculous. So I'm going to put on my glad rags. I'm totally thrilled that I'm getting this chance. Joan Jett is an icon, a rock icon. I was there. I saw the grief she had to put up with about, she's pretty good for a girl. And,
right.
Come on, really. Joan is like, she'll play like guys under the freaking table. she's a rock and roll queen. And
talk to me a little more about her. I mean, we've talked all this time about, you know, all the bands that have influenced you, but hardly at all about Joan so far. Tell me the day you first met her.
I was told that she was looking for a guitar player, and once again, it's too long of a story, but I was in a band that started in Boston, moved to New York, called Susan, and we did a record on RCA. And we actually, that was my first tour. We did a national tour. I came back, I was kind of hanging with a few different people. I was hanging with John Waite. He just left the band called The Babies. Mm-hmm. Somebody hooked us up. They thought we'd be good together. And I was actually hanging with one of my idols, Steve Marriott from Humble Pie and the Small Faces. And we were, you know, working together a little bit and talking about things. And then I got a call that Joan was looking for a guitar player. And I actually went down and auditioned. I don't know what you called it. We played together, and we hit it off, and we went back in. Part of the I Love Rock and Roll record was already recorded, but the sound of this band sounded so good that we actually redid most of this, 99% of the stuff. There are a few really cool things left on there by Eric Gamble, who was the guitar player before me, and he's a great producer and a really great guitar player. And but pretty much we did the whole I Love Rock and Roll record over again at Kingdom Sound out in Long Island. And then we hit the road, and I Love Rock and Roll came out. You know, so much of this stuff is happenstance and timing. And,
right.
You know, rock radio was really nothing. I mean, there were a couple of cool things. If I remember correctly, Freeze Frame was on there. McCartney was on there. Michael Jackson was on there. It was just, but real rock and roll was at a standstill.
Mm-hmm.
And I Love Rock and Roll just fit, you know, it just sounded like nothing else on the radio. So it just clicked. And as we toured the country, in our Winnebago playing clubs, I Love Rock and Roll started to go up the charts. And, you know, we were in the eye of the hurricane, so we didn't really see it. But what we saw was all of a sudden we had a tour bus and the crowds got bigger. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're going to be opening for ZZ Top or something like that.
Right.
And that's how we knew. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're starting to get these record company reports and, there's these magazines in the industry. And then it was number one, man, 7 weeks.
Did you guys know you had a hit with that record, I Love Rock and Roll? I mean, when you were, obviously you never know. It's like, it's not a science. But did it feel like, man, this is a good record?
Well, look, it's all, like I said, it's a combination of things. I mean, the song was written by my friend Alan Merrill, and he did it in his band, The Arrows. And, you know, they didn't have a mega hit with it. I mean, it took Joan's vibe and voice and the sound of the band to turn it into what it was. And it took the state of the music industry at the time and what was on the radio. I mean, it's all, there's so many variables, man. You know, who the hell knows?
Yeah, it's true.
Did it sound like a hit? I mean, it sounded like an anthem, but you never know.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of great songs out there that don't become number ones.
That's true.
It's just got such a, it's so simple, and it's such a basic premise, and the chorus is so singable that it just caught fire.
Do you still enjoy playing that one?
Well, I mean, I don't get to play it that much, but I'll do it next Saturday.
Right, at the show.
I have a hard time singing it because it's a weird song. You almost have to play it in the key of E, and it's kind of too low for me to sing.
Right, right.
I mean, it's perfect for Joan's voice, so I usually I grab a drunk girl from the audience and say, "Hey, man, you want to sing this?" but I think this time Christine Ullman from the SNL band is going to sing it.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, and you guys are going to be here in, it's Bethesda, Maryland, which is not far from where Joan Jett was, I think, went to high school at Wheaton in Rockville. So this is her stomping ground. So maybe you need to, you know, call her up and say, "Hey, what can I expect?"
But, well, I think the first time I'm going to see Joan again is at the Rock Hall.
Oh, nice.
You know, we're in. She's on the road all the time. I'm doing my thing. We don't really converse a lot.
Sure.
But we run into each other every so often. I love Joan. I could tell you in the time that I was in the band, we never had one argument. I mean, we got along great. We were great together on stage. Unfortunately, Lee Crystal passed away, so Maura, his wife, will be there, and Gary Ryan, the original bass player, will be there, and it's just going to be a really happy event for everybody. It's just a crowning achievement on a very long career by all of us.
Well, yeah, hey, you know? I mean, I know you're probably a busy man, all you guys are, but, you know, if you'd like to come back on TOP...
I'm slammed. You don't even want to know what my schedule is for the next week. So up until this, I mean, I'm all over the place. I mean, I do. You see, my thing also is I've been in long-term recovery, like almost 30 years, and I do a lot of stuff. I got a thing called Clean Getaway.
Oh yeah,
which is we're going to put an all-star band together, and we're going to raise money to try to help get people that desperately need treatment and have crappy insurance in to treatment centers. Obviously, you know, being in the news that. This is the worst heroin problem we've seen probably in 60 years in America. And, you know, that's I'm real busy with that. Like, I'm doing sobriety shows all over the place. And
nice.
Trying to give back on that end. And I actually do music groups at Detoxes twice a week. And between that and rock and roll and, you know, my daughter and stuff. I'm a pretty busy guy.
Sounds like you play for several causes. Why is this one important to you to play for the kids?
Oh, man. But yeah, come on. Rock and roll for children. You know, I mean, it's heartbreaking to see kids that are ill. And anything you do to make the journey easier, I'm in, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's horrible to see anybody sick, but to see kids have to go through cancer treatments, and it's just heartbreaking. But, you know, life is life, man. You just got to deal with it. And hopefully we could help people deal with it a little easier by raising some money.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. And thanks even more for taking the time to come play for the kids next Saturday.
Yeah, everybody come down. And I promise you that it's going to be, I have the set list, and it's going to be a rock and roll night for sure. I mean, we will leave that stage, gas tanks empty.
Well, that's what we want to hear. That's the only way to do it, man.
Loud and proud, baby.
All right. Awesome. Hey, thanks so much, Ricky Bird, for coming on WTOP.
All right, man. Thanks for talking to me.
All right. Congrats on the Rock Hall.
Thank you, baby.